the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Call it the start of hour two. Jay Pribman's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. And Maggie Wolfendale, Rick Hammerly, and more. Just off with Marty McGee. And to Pennsylvania we go with finally, after really week after week of uncertainty and a bit of a stonewalling from Harrisburg, it seems like there's some progress toward getting at least Penn National and Presque Isle going. Todd Mostoller joins us from the HBPA. And Todd, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And I was certainly heartened yesterday. I saw the letter go out that was circulated, and it feels like you had real authentic progress with the governor's office yesterday. Bring everybody up to speed about how you're crafting a start to seasons at Penn and at Presque.
Yeah, yesterday's meeting went very well. I guess the best way to couch it would be we finally see a light at the end of the tunnel. We were in darkness for an extended period of time, a lot like, you know, some other jurisdictions, but it was very difficult to try to find that light, and yesterday's meeting allowed us to do that. Essentially, the governor granted us a meeting with his staff as well as members of the Department of Health, and they conveyed that his release the previous day, for those that saw it, he basically alluded to the fact that professional sports and those individuals that run for purses would be able to potentially run in the yellow phase of his color scheme to open up the state. So we confirmed with the governor's office that that did include horse racing, and we asked them what we needed to do to get final approval. And essentially, our COVID-19 safety protocols need to be approved by the Department of Health. We expect those to be submitted by noon on Monday, and hopefully get an expedited approval of those protocols that will allow us to at least start the process of reopening Penn National, and then ultimately allowing horses to arrive at Presque Isle Downs to start a meet at Presque Isle Downs.
The first salvos in this direction, opening the backstretch at Presque Isle, and you know that there's a target, but not necessarily, you know, written in stone, and people shouldn't ship or make arrangements to ship until there's certainty to that date, and then an early July start essentially to the meet.
Yeah, we firmly believe that next Friday, that Erie, and it's just based on the numbers, that Erie County will go to a green status, which would then allow the casino there to open. They're a little bit different dynamic than Penn National because we need to get the horse population there. So, and a lot of those horses come from Tampa, and quite frankly, there's a lot of employees that come from Tampa, guys that work the gate and stuff like that also. So we're hopeful to start the process once they go to green. And I think July 6th, if I was a betting man, July 6th may be a week early, but I feel fairly confident that the next, you know, July 13th, that we're going to be able to conduct our first night of racing at Presque Isle Downs for the 2020 meet. But there's nothing written in stone, as in any of these plans in any of these states. Unfortunately, we don't know what tomorrow brings with this pandemic, but each day that passes, I feel more confident of that happening at Presque Isle.
Nice. Well, because I mean, it was obvious. It was obvious last week that you were getting exasperated with, you know, with the negotiations and the discussions. I mean, and frankly, it seemed like those discussions were awfully one-sided. It was you asking for some help and direction and getting no answer.
Yeah, it was frustrating, but you know, kudos to the governor's office for finally sitting down with us and us expressing why we believe we can return to racing safely. And, you know, we really got to thank a lot of the other tracks that put those protocols in place. I mean, we didn't reinvent the wheel here. We basically took what Tampa was doing, Gulfstream was doing, Churchill, you know, with them owning Presque Isle Downs. And the commission wanted one boilerplate for the entire state, and that's what will be submitted on Monday. So it was a team effort amongst all the horsemen's groups in Pennsylvania, as well as what other horsemen's groups and what other racetracks did prior to us. That a lot, you know, we didn't need to reinvent
nice.
The wheel, and they worked. More importantly, that was the one thing that the governor's office was very concerned with. We said these have worked, and these racetracks, Tampa and Gulfstream, as you know, raced throughout the height of the pandemic. So it's obvious that these work, right. And there's no reason that if we follow these protocols that we shouldn't be allowed to race. And with the approval from the Department of Health, we'll be running.
The corresponding Penn National dates. What is the target similar, or is it is there a different timetable?
Well, I mean, the target internally for me is similar. It's actually earlier because we already have horses there. As you know, we've been paying
right.
for training to continue, so we don't have to have an entire horse population come into the backside. They're there. Now we're going to have to get some people back because some trainers have decided that in the best interest of their business, they needed to move certain horses to different jurisdictions. And the plan is to hopefully start 2 days a week. And the reason we're doing 2 days a week early is because we have some questions of whether with the horses that have left, whether we'll be able to build three races or three cards a week. So we're going to start with two, build some confidence, do that for 3 weeks, and allow individuals that did leave to return. And we're hopeful that we'll be 3 days a week shortly thereafter, starting, I would think mid-June is a reasonable target. You know, in our discussions with Hollywood Casino or Penn National, they believe they need 3 weeks to bring everybody back from furlough. That's essential for racing. We need to get a book out. The book is ready, but we don't have dates. We need to get that out. And then the other unique dynamic is we take entries at Penn National 7 days out. So that last week is nothing more than a delay between entry and race day. So I would think mid-June is a reasonable goal, and I know my organization will do everything that we can do to facilitate that and get up and running as soon as possible.
Todd Mostoller with us, and Todd, question about the horse population and where the horses are going to come from, and you know one of the effects of having these delays is that outfits had to make plans and had to adjust accordingly. What's the concern particularly for Presque, because the people weren't sheltering and maintaining themselves at the track waiting for it to open. They're going to have to come from somewhere. I suppose the Tampa extension helps feed Presque Isle, correct?
Yeah, that would be correct. And Tampa, I know Tampa did reach out to Presque Isle Downs management and try to get some ideas from them, and it played a role in them extending their meeting. We get a lot of the jockeys also.
Nice.
Obviously, Antonio Gallardo comes up, Pablo Morales comes up, Scott Spieth, so... You know, the Tampa's extension certainly played right into the hands of Presque Isle timing that I think will work very well. And
nice.
I get constant phone calls, you can imagine, from horsemen, but it's an interesting thing. A lot of people, there are people that actually have gotten stalls at Mountaineer that, you know, their intention is to go there to bridge the gap a little bit, and then they're only 2.5 hours, I believe it's 2.5, 3 hours from Presque Isle, and finish the move to Presque Isle, you know, once that's solidified as far as an opening date.
Well, you know, by the way, you forgot to mention the most important Tampa to Presque Isle jockey, my guy, Slick Willie Martinez.
Well, I apologize, Steve. I didn't realize that he was your guy. Willie.
I love Willie. We love Willie.
We like him on the front end, don't we?
Absolutely. Exactly right. Exactly. One other question before we wrap, Todd, and that's it occurs to me, you know, because of the extensive standard bred operations from both breeding and racing, was there some work together and some tie-in and cooperation with the standard bred brethren?
There always is in Pennsylvania. We have what's called the Equine Coalition. It's the Two Horsemen's Group, us and the PTHA, which represent Philadelphia Park or Parks. And then there's the horse or the standard bred side, and there everybody's a part of the coalition, and we all work together because we know it's a unified effort, especially politically. You know, when we have our annual budget, and you know, everybody has their own lobbyist, and everybody works very well together as a team to solve the problems that inevitably crop up in Pennsylvania and the industry in general. So, yeah, it was a unified effort, and I want to thank everybody for all those groups also for being a part of it, and they were a big part of what we accomplished yesterday also. So it's you just got to keep working together and solving
nice
problems, and we'll keep, our goal is to keep, you know, to keep improving and getting better. And unfortunately, sometimes there's some hurdles, and you get over those hurdles and figure out where you got to go next.
Well, just to know that there's, you know, there's a clear path. I mean, that has got to help everybody breathe a sigh of relief. So it was really, really heartened to see it, and to stay in contact for horsemen and owners and stakeholders, PAHBPA.com. Todd, I'm sure you want to get some of your horses into action, and looking forward to getting going. Eastern part of the state has got a more difficult road, but Penn and Presque Isle look like they can see the wire from here.
Yes, we can, and appreciate the time to convey what's going on, and people to, you know, have an understanding and squelch all the rumors. The rumor mill that that starts after a day like yesterday is pretty comical, but we got to ignore the noise and take care of the issue. So that's what we're doing.
Well done, and Horsemen Helping Horsemen, the HBPA, Todd Mostoller, stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Steve. Have a good day.
Not at all. Todd Mostoller, everybody. And there's your update and good news in Grantsville and in Erie. Those of you that are looking to get going from any standpoint, from racing, from handicapping and playing. We're going to stay right here, and Jay Pribman is going to join us. And, of course, we were with Jay 48 hours ago, and I said, Jay, Friday – we speculated whether there'd be things to talk about. Lo and behold, Jay, there's things to talk about. Good morning.
Yeah, what a crazy week this has been. Good morning. How are you?
Good. You know, looking forward to a racing weekend. But, you know, you never get used to, Jay, you never get used to these, you know, top horses, you know, getting injured and being forced to retire. It just, you know, it. You want to talk about taking wind out of sails.
Well, in this case, I'd say you never get used to top horses being injured and retired. I'm going to not use a key word that you just used in the previous sentence, because the injury, fortunately, was not catastrophic.
Right.
Or serious.
Right.
It did not obviously prevents him from racing in the short term, but there were only two screws put in. The fracture was not displaced, and he could have come back, if not by the end of this year, certainly as a four-year-old, and competed. So, you know, his value, though, is perceived as being, you know, much higher to go to stud. And so with a grade one win and in the Arkansas Derby, or division of the Arkansas Derby, and three other victories, he'll go to stud after that career. So that's, you know, that's what a lot of this sport is, or this activity is, enhancing value.
Yeah, and you know, you could tell from Dave Grenig's piece yesterday, detailing you know the chain of events, you know, the wide array of emotions. I mean, George Bolton was pretty stoic about it, and you know, at the same time, you know, he talked about his folks and how excited they were for Nadal and for the season to unfold. But it, you know, it just, as you say, I mean, it's not the first, won't be the last.
No, and it's one of the things, you know, sort of in a wider level here that we've talked about earlier this week about Maxfield and his comeback and the Matt Wynn and how the postponement of the Kentucky Derby is of benefit to a horse like him. Well, here's the flip side of that. Postponement of the Kentucky Derby. Here's a horse who was so ready to run on the first Saturday in May that he actually won a race on
right.
the first Saturday in May. And now he's not going to make the Derby. And as you just alluded to, there will be others, because it's just the nature of the game. Horses are going to have injuries, hopefully not as serious as this, to prevent them or to have a decision rendered that he won't race again. But I'm sure there's others who are currently on a Derby Watch Top 20 who are not going to make it to the race, and not just because of performance, but because they get dinged up and they're going to need some time. So, by the way, just wanted to celebrate. We actually made a – usually we don't update our Derby Watch Top 20 until every Wednesday, but in light of the fact that Nadal was favored on Marty McGee's line and is obviously out of the Kentucky Derby, we have an updated Derby Watch Top 20. We dropped him. We added another horse, and Marty updated his odds towards the Derby. So that was posted online this morning with 'Tis the Law now favored with Maxfield the second choice.
We talked with Marty, and Jay, in addition to those kinds of machinations and you know, rankings and so forth, there's also decisions to be made right within the Baffert camp. And, you know, we were, as part of our conversation on Wednesday, the speculation that the team had kind of trained their sights with Charlatan on the Woody Stevens at 7/8, but on the flip side now, kind of hard not to reconsider the Belmont, I'd imagine.
Well, they're both under consideration. The Woody Stevens was a significant option in a large reason because they wanted to keep the two horses apart, and that's now not an option, you know, not a concern. It still might make the most sense, but you know, we'll just have to see. They're you know, Charlatan had an extra week after his Arkansas Derby win before he worked as compared to Nadal. So he was actually kind of being trained as though he was going to go for the shorter race based on you know, the approach to the works. But look, he's the kind of horse that you could ramp up in a hurry to go a mile and an eighth. But I, you know, based on everything I've been told, I would make this Woody Stevens the slight favorite at the moment for his next start. You know, and one aspect of that might be what transpires regarding his split sample coming out of the Arkansas Derby, which is was on a couple of days ago, was in the process of being sent out for confirmation, and that process takes, you know, a little bit of time, but the wheels were moving on that. And if confirmed, and if he's disqualified, he would be absent a grade one win from the Arkansas Derby. And the Woody Stevens is a grade one. That's one of the, it's obviously not as prestigious a race or as rich a race as the Belmont, but it's from a breeding value, a grade one is a significant achievement for a colt. So that makes that race have some appeal just from that standpoint. If the split sample does not confirm what the original sample had, then that's all moot. The Charlatan would be considered to have not tested positive because there was not confirmation of the initial test. And then he would, at that point, retain his grade one from the Arkansas Derby. And, I mean, who knows if that scenario would enter into the decision as to where he goes, because he'd have that grade one. You know, in theory, the Woody Stevens would be an easier grade one in terms of level of competition, especially if both Tis the Law and Maxfield go in the Belmont. Tis the Law's for sure, and I would say Maxfield is... there's a very good chance he could run there. So we'll just see how it plays out. There's just a lot of little parts that need to be, the pros and cons of which need to be weighed before that final decision is made. And it doesn't need to be made for, the race is still 22 days away.
Absolutely. On the 3-year-old front, it's funny to some degree because I think, Jay, about those, particularly about those 2.5-3 weeks from, you know, the Lexington and the first Saturday typically in April, where, you know, the Wood and the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby traditionally sit. And, you know, then you have that, you know, that anxious period where, you know, horses are training up and you know they're biding their time to get to Derby, and this is so different, you know, and I that was a great context that you put it in, you know, the way, you know, the situation, you know, benefited Maxfield and you know took it out from under Nadal. These are going to be, these situations and these eventualities, or however you want to characterize them, they're going to be discussed for years. I mean, it's when we finally get through to the other end of this thing, you know, after Preakness, I suppose, and Breeders' Cup. It's,
you know, Steve, I thought of one other. I thought of one other aspect of the Charlatan decision making that, you know, may come into play, depending on how the Arkansas Derby split sample plays out. And that's, you know, if he's disqualified from the Arkansas Derby, he would lose his points towards the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, there's that factor to weigh as well, because if he retains the win, then he's got the 100 points from there. The Belmont Stakes is a point-scoring race towards the Derby. The Woody Stevens is not, but if you run in the Woody Stevens or even the Belmont, you obviously still have other opportunities in subsequent months. Like,
sure,
you know, there's certainly races like the Haskell or even the Travers, you know, that are significant races in their own right, but are also, in the case of the Haskell for sure, and likely in the case of the Travers, to offer points towards the Derby this year as well. So there's just a lot of pros and cons about how Charlatan's potential, the two races for Charlatan's next start, and a lot of it might depend on a lab test.
Well, in the meantime, let's, Jay, touch on some of the other, you know, racing news. And we didn't get a chance the other day to talk about some of the results that you took in at Santa Anita. Raging Bull with the Shoemaker win, and looking toward this weekend as well. Some pure racing analysis and thoughts.
Well, you know, in the case of Raging Bull, I talked to Chad Brown after the race, and he said the horse had been ready to go for more than a month because his intended first start of the year was the Makers 46 Mile, which would have been in mid-April at Keeneland, which had to cancel its meeting. And as you know, they're going to run a brief meeting in mid-July where a lot of those big races, like the Bluegrass, like the Makers 46 Mile, will be run. And so that was the Shoemaker Mile was really the first opportunity for Raging Bull to run in a race that he's supposed to be in, which is a grade one mile race. And so that's why he came to California. I think if he'd have run in the Makers 46 Mile, he might have had a different campaign subsequent to that. But he came out here. The race set up really well for him. There was a real hot pace, and he ran into it and ran strong. And it's obvious that that's what he wants to do. He wants a fast-paced mile to run in on grass, and that going out to a mile and an eighth, he can be effective at. I mean, he did win the Hollywood Derby out here at Del Mar as a three-year-old a year and a half ago, and he couldn't quite handle a mile and a quarter last year when he ran in the Manhattan. And Chad said that, you know, he's certainly good enough to run well at those distances, but that a mile is his wheelhouse, and that's what they're going to focus on. And he's in the Breeders' Cup Mile now because that race the other day was a win and you're in.
Yep.
So he's sitting in a good spot right now, and they can just sort of pick, you know, what spots and what spacing works best for them during the year. I'm sure races like, you know, the Four Star Dave and at Saratoga, I'm sure would be, you know, at the top of the list for a horse like him to be in. He ran in it last year and it was a good second in it. So I'm sure that would be among the things for him. So his race was good, and then the filly race to me was, I didn't think that field came up that strong, but, you know, Keeper of the Stars has really found her sea legs the last couple of starts. She was kind of floundering around for a while, but she's run two very good races in a row and got the biggest win of her career and for her young trainer Jonathan Wong the other day when she won. I just thought the field for the Shoemaker Mile was stellar, and I thought the field for the Gamely was not quite as stellar.
Nicely put. Keep for the Stars. And we also talked to Richard Mandela about Jolie Olympica and United. Nice bookends of the weekend for the Mandela Barn.
Certainly so. I mean, he had a really nice weekend. You know, United had gone to Dubai and ended up not being able to run because of the abandonment of that Dubai World Cup card. He was going to run in the mile and a half grass race over there and came back, and he obviously loves the Santa Anita Turf Course. He ran the best race of his life on it in the Breeders' Cup last fall when he just got tagged by Bricks and Mortar, who was Horse of the Year. So that's really his favorite spot, and he ran another good race. He's a consistent horse, fires every time. And Jolie Olympica, she's run three times in this country now, and it just seems like turf sprinting is definitely what she wants to do. She ran well enough in her one try going two turns, but it seems like one turn is more suitable for her style and the way she runs. And, you know, hopefully she'll get a mile or two turns going down the line, but at this point that's what she wants to do. And I thought the filly of Drysdale's for Team Valor, Alexandra, was coming off a long way off, ran a big race chasing her home. She finished really strongly, and you'd think she'd move forward off of that race.
We'll talk later to Brad Free and handicap the weekend card. Jay, it occurs to me because people are asking us on Twitter regarding the Belmont plans. Have you formulated a trip, or what's your sense of how things unfold on that front for DRF?
Yeah, well, we're still discussing everything. I'm not sure that I'm going to go this year because of there's just a lot of factors in play, which includes, you know, a cross-country flight to and from New York and all that
right.
would entail. So we're just going to weigh the situation as it comes. So, but you know, obviously Dave will be there, and we'll have others there as well. But I may I may not go this year. We'll just wait and see.
Hmm. Well, I will figure out a way. If that is how it unfolds, we will be sending a dry ice shipment from King Umberto.
That would be good.
We are not letting June pass, Jay, without some slices that you can pretend that you're there if you can't be.
That'll be the biggest disappointment of all if it turns out I don't.
I know. Jay Pribman, I appreciate it, and we'll see what next week brings.
Yeah, hopefully a slightly quieter week, but who knows?
Exactly. It's the, as we like to call it, the greatest unscripted drama in sports.
Pretty much so. Well, have a good weekend. Thanks again for having
right.
me on, and talk to you next week.
Thanks for the reporting. Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman. We'll stay right here, and we're reaching for Maggie Wolfendale. Maggie's going to join us and get a little feel to how it's unfolded for her and husband Tom Morley, but for Maggie, undoubtedly, with the kids and with the morning activities at the barn and then the TV coverage that Fox Sports 2 is bringing virtually nationwide, it's been a real treat. And the band is somewhat back together too this weekend, because Rich Migliori and Maggie and Andy yesterday, and the conviviality was very clear as they were bouncing the information off each other. One thing, of course, that we've missed, and it's got to be a little hard. I'm anxious to ask Maggie her thoughts. Not as easy to be, evaluating the horse flesh via video. It'll be a lot better starting on Wednesday when she's back in the paddock at Belmont Park and providing specific notes. I think maybe Maggie's with us already. Maybe not. No, Case? No, not yet. Okay. All right. We will. All right. Casey working on that. And we'll give you as we wait her arrival. The internet is, as I mentioned last week, continues to kind of throw an added curveball into the equation. The sluggishness with Casey and I trying to communicate back and forth. But when it comes to the TV coverage, essentially it's within the 1-6 range on a daily basis, and I know they've been sort of flip-flopping, who's covering what. Like Andy, I know was on early yesterday, and then they kind of switch off, and Tom Amos and more. Today, 12:30. 12:30 to 2. this is some crazy thing. 1 to 5:30, Fox Sports Regionals. Or let's see. 12:30 to 2:20 and 4:30 to 5:30. Huh. Boy, it is. It is actually on a daily basis. It's a little different. Fox Sports 2, 12:30 to 2:20. Then there's a gap until 4:30 to 5:30. MSG Plus, 1 to 5:30. And the Fox Sports Regionals have that middle portion of the day from 2 to 5:30 today. So not as kind of a broken up scenario. Saturday, Fox Sports 1, the flagship, picks up coverage 2:30 to 6:30 tomorrow, 2:30 to 6:30 on Fox Sports 1. Fox Sports 2 will have the early portion of the day, 1 to 2:30. MSG Plus is on all day, 1 to 6:30. And the Fox Sports Regionals, 3 to 6:30. And fairly clear on Sunday, Fox Sports 2, 1 to 6, MSG Plus, 1 to 6, and the Fox Sports Regionals, 3 to 6. So there it is. And then Belmont opening day on Wednesday, and we hope to be down there broadcasting the first 3 days of the meet, and hoping that we get in with a horse or two on Friday. But opening day at Belmont, at least from 1 to 2:20 on Fox Sports 2 and 4:30 to 6. So the rest of that action. Well, the phone, so phone, unbelievable. Phone service, KC having trouble with circuits busy. All right, you know what, Case? Take the bottom of the hour break then. It's just about 10:30, and we can always switch off, too, to maybe if you try Hammer, he's going to join us next after Maggie. So one way or the other, I'll text her. And second half coming up with hopefully Maggie and Rick Hammerly, Brad Free, Nick Tamara.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday.
we're back at the races, and we did get to Maggie, but she's got now an obligation with the network and their production stuff. So we'll maybe try to get her on the back end in between. So that that didn't work out great, but hopefully we'll get to her. And conveniently, though, Rick Hammerly is standing by. Hammer, good morning.
I know, we got Maggie. Got
Hammer, right. Where are you?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello?
Nice. Yeah, I can. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So as soon as I heard you say Maggie's coming on, I said, great. I started making some eggs. I said, this is great. Then I saw the phone ring. I go, oh, geez. So thanks for playing the long version of that song as the intro, and I whipped down the eggs. So I'm ready to go.
Perfect. Well, yeah, some of this you can't, you know, it's the...
Oh, yeah.
You just gotta roll with the punches, as they say.
Absolutely.
And boy, if ever there was a weak hammer to roll with the punches, this was it.
Boy, you know why? That's kind of what, after yesterday, too, it's officially the road to the Derby starting. It seems like it always happens, a horse gets off the trail and you realize what a rough trail it is. And it doesn't matter when the Derby is, just get there is a prize in itself. So, yeah, a lot of things going on this week. But it's racing, we're back one way or another. Things are starting to come together on one end, for sure. I'm glad to see, Belmont start and Laurel starting, Kentucky's in full swing, and just got the news yesterday about Del Mar, which is good. Just gives a little bit more hope for down the line that things are going to get a little bit more back to normal down here. And the good thing about the start at Del Mar, a little different. First of all, the fair, the San Diego County Fair, which is run immediately before meat starts down there, and to tell you the truth, it created a lot of havoc for racing. But the main thing is the turnaround, and the fair might end 10 days or 12 days before Del Mar is supposed to open. But you got to remember, this fair takes place in that whole area. They got llamas and chickens and everything else in the backside there for some of their shows. So those have to be out. Everything's got to be cleaned and disinfected. The stalls, the racetrack is being used for stuff. So the turnaround is not that quick. And so you're not allowed on the backside, usually no more than, definitely no more than a week and sometimes less, to get ready for the meet. So it's hard to get people, especially from out of towners, to come in because they can't get there early. And so he can't get a breeze over the track, and if they miss the first book, it's been a rough timing situation. So the fair canceled earlier, and so that left a gap there. So Del Mar's going to take advantage of that in a couple ways. One, they're going to open earlier. I think it's 8 days earlier. They were going to open on the 17th or 18th, and now they're going to open on July 10th. But the barn area is going to open on June 26th. So, at least a full 2 weeks before the meet starts, the horses will come, and it'll be a little bit different getting them there. It'll take a little bit longer, but at least you can get there earlier. Excuse me, and for some of the barns that some might come from out of town, they can now plan on getting there a little earlier, settle in, get a breeze over the track before a race, which will be good. So it'll be a little bit, it won't be rush, rush, rush down there, but they're going to go 3 days a week, which is what they've been doing up here at Santa Anita, but they're going to try and run more races a day. So at the end of the whole scheme of things, they'll run close to as many number of races that they did last year when there were 4 days a week. So that'll be, try to run 10, at least 10 for the 3 days. And so that's good. They still have the ship and win deal where you come in and the first start. You got to check the website for the particulars because they change it around every once in a while. But basically, anybody coming from out of town, you get a 20-25% bonus on your first start and some shipping money, and there's some maiden incentives and all that stuff. So that's good. Their stake schedule will come out today. I just was looking at it, very similar, you know, not a whole lot of changes. Not really much you can do in 6-7 weeks. The Pacific Classic, which is the headliner, is going to be on August 22nd, I see. And who knows that even where that fits in with everybody else, because, you know, none of the other schedules haven't been out either. So, but that's normally where that is. It'll end with the Futurity and things like that. So, good news for that. They're going to start. They're going to do no spectators. Of course, you have to say that at the beginning. But once again, you know, we're talking opening in July, running to September. I mean, that's a few months away. And, you know, with the SeaWorlds of the down there and Legoland and all that stuff, who knows? They start letting people in. Maybe they'll be able to let a few owners in, you know, to watch the races. Who knows? Play that by ear. But it'll be spectator-free, unless it's not. And so, you know, it's a good deal. I haven't seen the overnight purses, but I'm sure they'll be very similar. And it's, you know, we're going to have Saratoga. We're going to have Del Mar this year. So that'll complete the cycle, and mentally it'll be good for everybody to realize maybe we're getting back to some normalcy.
You know, it's funny that this, you know, that they make this adjustment, Rick, because we had sort of, I mean, speculated looking at the way the calendar, you know, was established with Los Al, that, you know, there was a pretty good spread between the, you know, closing day at Los Al and opening day at Del Mar. And so there's some logic to this, and you know, spreading it out a little bit even more, it helps the, you know, helps the racing office as well.
Well, you know, you just hate till everything settles down here. You hate to go out and say you're going to do more than you can accomplish without knowing it. And
right.
it's, you can always add, but to take away is just, that's not good. And 3 days a week here. You know, so Santa Anita started back, and they had a 4-day week last week, right? And, you know, you could tell the 3 days this Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So 3 weeks seems to be right now where that, you know, that's the soft spot. Side, you start getting out of your little comfort zone there, you pay attention. And, I know when I was going, we lived 4 days a week, you know, 6-7 years ago, that we had, it was 4 days a week. You know, we could do 8 and 8 on Thursday, or Thursday and Friday, and then, you know, 10 and 9 on the weekend. And when we were pushed to go outside that, you paid the price down the line. So it's good that they're starting out to 3 days. And just get that done. And I think we're showing, over the last couple months here, that people want to, they'll bet, but now they can be a little pickier, and you know, they don't want a bunch of 5s and 6 horse deals. They want to see some horses with some races with some horses in them, and hopefully that by 1 or 3 days down there, that'll accomplish that.
Well, when you spread it out, one start a horse over the course of the meet, that would be a, you know, that would really impact things.
I lost you for 1 second there. Sorry, Steve.
No, I just said that, you know, by adding that week and cutting, you know, cutting the schedule, spreading the schedule out further, you might essentially get one extra start out of, you know, a certain percentage of the horse population, and it ends up, you know, being significant in terms of field size average, and, you know, hence the handle. I mean, it's, you know, the one thing that's become, you know, very clear is the, you know, the handle impact when it comes to the field size, and that, you know, this has been a dialogue now for, you know, the last several years.
Well, you know, I talked about this on, I did a little podcast with Jonathan Kitchen earlier in the week, and, you know, touched on the fact that you know, we went, I think, 5-6 years in California running 52 weeks a year without a break. And, you know, it's just like you keep trying to say, put your hand up in the back of the class going, you know, hey, take a break, And guess what? Eventually, you run into a wall, and the fields get small. You just do too much. So, you know, hopefully the powers that be nowadays realize that. You know, you just don't have to run every week, and you don't have to run, you know, a lot. Less is more. I've been preaching that on your show for so long. It's better to do it when you don't have to, not when you're forced to. And unfortunately, right now out here, forced to do it. We'll see. It's gonna be kind of wild to see how the community evolves around, you know, not only here but also in Saratoga. I mean, they're gonna, you know, restaurants are quote open here, but they're not open yet. They're allowed to open, and I'm sure they'll be getting ready down there. It's gonna be how the communities are. Are people gonna show up just to be in town? To be around racing and to, you know, go out and have some fun in the town? Is it going to be the same? We'll adjust as the county opens things up and things loosen up a little bit. But I think the beaches will be open by then. So, you know, it's still a summer spot down there. But, who knows about rentals and the place that, you know, you used to rent, it was available because the people who lived there were on vacation. But if those people aren't on vacation, then there's no place to rent, so you're not going down. So it's a kind of a conundrum there. The same thing at Saratoga, as far as that goes. I mean, I know me. I talked to the boys the last week. I said, let's go. We got the house rented. Let's go. And just have fun in Saratoga and, you know, whatever. Just to be around and enjoy it. So who knows how much of that's going to happen, but it's just going to be nice to turn on the TV and see races from Saratoga and from Del Mar.
Have you talked to many horsemen and you know, the people? I mean, I know a certain percentage probably have their own condos and certainly, you know, some with their own properties, that are summer homes and such. What about the, because I think there's a lot of people concerned here, and one thing that's uncertain about Saratoga's element, Rick, is how much resistance there's going to be by some of the, you know, the people who typically rent and give out their houses or their rental units. How many are going to be willing to do it this year? And it's a real question mark, I've only heard a couple of anecdotes so far.
Well, I think it's a little bit different situation where, you know, New York City was more of a hotbed than we are here. So, you know, I know they were checking license plates in Rhode Island and Florida, North Carolina. Anybody had a New York plate, they'd get out. So I don't know how much that has slowed down a little bit. But I do know for the trend the last few years here, it's been trending. You know, Del Mar got to be so expensive that a lot of people were, you know, hoping to get stalls up here, or hoping that the barn area would stay up here and they could just ship down. So I think they're going to shut the barn area down, and I'm not 100% sure, so don't go crazy if I'm not right, but I think they are going to have everybody leave and head down to Del Mar and Los Al and San Luis Rey and fill them up. But like I said, over the years, there was a kind of a tendency to, for some of the people to say, you know what, it's just too much. It costs too much. That place, the place that used to be $5,000 for the meat, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, is now $12,000. And I mean, it just, the hotels that you could stay for, you know, $149 or $320 now. It really is unbelievable. So whether those prices are going to be a little bit different this year, and like as you said, the availability of them. So we'll see. I did talk to someone down there about the rentals, and they said they haven't really got a whole lot of rentals, but that was before they announced that they're officially open, so maybe that'll open some things up. But, like I say, hey, that summer trip to wherever they were going, maybe it's going to be canceled, so places are going to be open, and so I don't know. I know we have some friends that do beach camp. In other words, they run a little beach camp for kids for the summer and teach them how to swim and surf and all that stuff. And then Gina just talked to them the other day, and they're probably not opening up because the reservations of people coming in from out of town, which is what they get a lot of businesses, you know, way, way down. People are still not ready to hit the road and live in hotels and do things. So it's summer's going to change, I think, a lot of people's attitudes. They may hopefully get out more and get back to normal a little bit. We just don't know. So all I can do is make it available and see how it happens. But, I'm happy to report just being around, out and about, that the panic is off people's faces, which I'm hopefully it is there too, and starting to get back into some bit of normalcy, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk a little racing. And, I should have reached out last night, Hammer, because and I'll do it with you because you have had plenty of connection up to Golden Gate, and I don't want the whole morning to go by and not alert people to the two $75,000 stakes tomorrow and Sunday at Golden Gate. Sunday it's the Cal Oaks, which will go as the seventh, and tomorrow there's a very nice 10 horse field that is the feature, the Camilla Orso, and it's a really competitive group, 5-furlong turf sprint, and of course the Oaks goes a route of ground, mile and a 16th, and there's some horses from Santa Anita been sent up, as well as some of the locals. Not a big group, but it's a quality group of 3-year-olds, and I just wanted to get them mentioned, because on Monday, that All American, Val Brinker's Brinkerhoff's horse, Restrained Vengeance, 5-year-old that really good, career best buyer in the win, and I want to get a hold of Val Brinkerhoff to discuss what's going on. And I owe Jonathan Wong a call because of Keeper of the Stars win, and he got left in the green room, Rick, because of the charlatan news on Wednesday, so I didn't get to Jonathan.
Oh, you know what? Jonathan, he's been knocking him dead up there for a long time, and Val, he's loved that horse. We tried to get that horse in at Kentucky Downs last meet, and it was calm, and the race was overfilled. It was one of those ones, am I going to get in? Well, you're number 16 out of 14, not sure. And should I ship, should I not ship, and decided not to ship. Of course, he would have got in, and I think he ended up going somewhere else and won soon thereafter. But he's always liked that horse. And I will tell you, Golden Gate Field has been a quiet success story over the last few years. They've really come back and been solid. And even through the, through this thing, and I think it's been good. They've kind of been below the radar, but putting out some good racing, and it spices it up when some horses from here head up there. And the Camilla Orso, now years ago, that race used to be 6 furlongs on the dirt when I was up there many moons ago and through the year. So I don't even know when they changed to 5/8 on the turf. But when in doubt, put it on the turf. But of course, they don't have dirt up there anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter. But stake races have gone well up there. They've finally found the right blend. Sometimes you try to run too many, and it doesn't work. But you find some gaps in between some of the races down in Southern California, and which they obviously did with this one, and it's good. I see Tomlin's back up there, and some Blaine Wright. Now, see, guys like Blaine Wright who where'd he come from? Well, he runs up in Seattle, a ton of horses up there, but he's been coming down to Golden Gate Fields for a while, and this guy can train a horse, and he's got Coco B in there, which I trying to turf for the first time, I give that horse a little bit of a look at 6-1. But a nice field up there, and for those of them that are looking for an outlet sometimes, and Santa Anita and out into, check out Golden Gate. A lot of good horsemen up there. A lot of trainers, like I said, from down here started up there, and they still have stables and ship back and forth. So I just was looking at the Camilla Orso as you said that, but I haven't perused it. But I see Blaine Wright, I would give him a second chance. But Golden Gate Field, always an option, especially at the end of the day for you guys back on the East Coast.
Agreed. I invite people to look at this race tomorrow. It goes off at 4:23 Pacific, and the Camilla Urso fillies and mares going five on the turf. And I couldn't really separate the – I thought the inside five, Tomlin, Coco B, I'm a Happy Cat, Left Alone, and Princess Vivian, I thought they were all candidates. And it's funny because the favorite, Storming Lady, Marquez, and 4-1. But you can tell by the line that there's real indecision here. So I would go price shopping in that feature on Saturday. And Hammer, we should, before we talk about if there's any spots that you've handicapped, we should really revisit the 2-year-old storyline. And you warned everybody to be aware of, and it's really paid off.
Yeah, Luis Mendez. You know, we try. I think every year we try. You know, ring that bell, and so sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. Like I said, this group, Brocklebank Group, out in they've decided to settle out in Utah, and tried to. We were at site on Santa Anita for a few years, and it just didn't fit in with their operation. And I remember getting the stallification from Luis Mendez, and I was like, who's that? And he called and said, we talked about it. He goes, he's my on-track guy and really nice gentleman. And they train their horses. Like, we'll go run through it real quick. It's a place called Dixie Downs, right outside Lake George in Utah, which is not that far from here, 6-ish hours, I'm going to say, hour or so north. Out of Las Vegas into Utah, and it's a real it's a real track. I mean, they kind of run races there, but they're non-Terra Mutual. So they've always been horses coming from Utah, but now their works are officially recorded, and you can see them. And they come in and they're fresh, and they're there to win early because a lot of them are for sale. You know, they want to win and say, hey, look what we could do. And he gets them ready, and Louis takes care of them on the track. They usually have one work on at Santa Anita after they're come from, you know, fresh and fit from Utah. And I think they're 3-for-3. I think they won all the 2-year-old races. And once again, there's a race the first race today, and he's got one in here, Smooth Like Butter. It's a cowbred race. So they got open horses. They got cowbred races and horses, too. So keep your eye on Luis Mendez. They're literally every time he runs one. And the prices have been okay, to tell you the truth. But he's in there. There's a horse on the outside who has just exploded on the scene here the last 3 or 4 years. Has some 2-year-olds as well. He's got a first-timer in there that looks like it could be live. And then he's got the old first horses running back. So 2-year-olds obviously run back quicker than some. So here's Miss Glorious on the outside with a start that showed some speed last time. Which could be tough, too. But, Luis Mendez, you know, write him down. It's one of those names that doesn't jump off the page at you unless you know. So, we were happy to alert everybody on that.
I love it. And the other, you know, the other under-the-radar type down at Gulfstream, too, Michael Yates, doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's one circuit I haven't followed. I've been doing a lot of stuff here and there, but my favorite track is gone. Fawner, I can't believe it. I had a good closing day there at Fawner. Hit him, won a few contests and a few bucks and back and forth. So thanks again to the guys there at Fawner and Will Rogers as well, as we talked about. But doing the right thing, moving them on, you know, giving us something to play in the early part of the week and you know, really putting on a show. And for some reason, I latched onto that place a couple months ago and really got the feel of it and, you know, enjoyed the racing there. That's a place I haven't been there. So next year, I'm gonna be there live for sure. Turns out we have
that's
10 miles from there.
I was going to say, you got your friends that you told that story about, and so now you got a tie-in.
Absolutely. They're in Hastings. I told them, I said, we're actually meeting them this summer up in Wyoming. They got a place up there, too, to get out for a while. I said, you're going to have some house guests next year when during Fauner Park. But anyway, they did a really good job, and it was, you know, kind of set a little bit of a model for people, along with a couple of the other tracks that were open, that, hey, look, you can run. We can run. You can run. And I think it everything went smooth, I'm sure they got a few phone calls from some of the tracks that are opening now, you know, saying, okay, what'd you guys do? Give us some of your protocols. And, you know, there's a lot of sharing going on with the tracks. I know that for sure. And some newer tracks that are opening now, you know, jumped on board with some of the procedures that we did at Oaklawn, and some of the things that were just done at some of the tracks that ran, that I know were included in that national, you know, guideline, and then individually at other tracks, because it's not, there's a lot of things to think about. There's a lot of holes to plug, and you have to have an answer for all of them when you turn in your proposal, not only to the racing board, but yet, you know, the health department's looking over the shoulder too, and making sure that everything is, you know, tight, buttoned up, and anyway, they did a great job doing that. So good for that. And I've got my one. Here's my pet peeve for the day, and I'm going to send some pictures out once I get it all lined up. After watching a lot of tracks here, does anybody else see this at the finish line of racetracks, where they have a sign, a post that says finish on it, and then they have the mirror, which is really where the finish line is, because that's where they take the photo. But the post and the mirror, many times, are not in the same place. And it always bothered me. And I've got pictures I run up when tracks are finishing, I take a picture where the mirror is. Now, Santa Anita has the mirror inside the post that says finish, which, hey, that's what, you know, seems to be Oaklawn, same thing right on there. But there are tracks that have the sign that says finish, and the mirror is 5 feet past that or a couple feet before it. And it always blows my mind. So I'm going to send out some pictures that keep your eye on this now when you watch tracks and the horses finish. And, you know, it's a tight finish, and, okay, well, there's a sign that says finish, and then there's a mirror a little bit before or after, so which one is it, and why can't they be, say, finished where the finish line is? So that was my thing this week. I've got pictures about 8 tracks, and then the mirror and the finish sign are not in sync, and that just drives me crazy. So I wrote that down. I said I got to talk about that. But anyway, a couple races out here at Santa Anita this weekend, a couple stakes. Like I said, a little light this weekend. But that's because next weekend is it Santa Anita Derby already next weekend, right? Boy, yep. We're getting into June. So they'll have there, and I think they have 3 or 4 other stakes that day. So sometimes when you're trying to make bigger cards, you have to sacrifice in the middle. And so a couple races this weekend. I think Saturday's the honeymoon. Is that the one on Saturday? Yeah, the 3-year-old fillies going 1 mile and 1/8 on the turf there. A couple of horses that have won more than, you know, over their won more than their maiden race. Laura's Light, one of them, winning 3 races. She's she could be, along with Parkour and Speed, she gets out front. She's no cinch, but she has won 3 races. She's 2 for 2 at Santa Anita. You know, Parkour on the outside, gotta love that name. Gonna ran once in a stake and got beat by Laura's Light, and also another horse in here, the 4 horse, which is the Jeff Mullins horse. I don't know how to pronounce it, so I'm not. It starts with a C, and it's long, and it's from Ireland. She's from Ireland. But starts from the back of the pack and has closed in some instances, and I think she's 8-1 in the morning line. And if you're looking for a bit of a price, I would throw her in there. Not KP's Dreaming, but I guess I'm not even going to try and pronounce this one, but Mullins horse is the 4 horse. And with Parkour and Laura's Light, maybe to get out there and ding-dong a little bit and give her something to run at. But a nice little bunch of three-year-old fillies here. And then on Sunday, the Santa Maria, which is for fillies and mares going along in the dirt. Now, Now we're back to a typical race around the country for fillies and mares belong in the dirt. Usually get, you know, one or two nice horses and small. So, but return of CC coming back for a little bow race here at Santa Anita, coming off the Apple Blossom win. Really good race there. And meets her I'm going to call her rival here. Why not? Hard Not to Love. They ran against each other in the Beholder. And John Sheriff's trained Hard Not to Love, and we know what he can do with nice fillies. And they're lined up next to each other, one and two in the Santa Maria. And you know, you kind of have to say it looks like a match race between those two. But it'll be good. It's always nice to see good fillies run again. And so they're getting prepped for other stuff down the road. And you know, just like I said, this is just a week to kind of take a look at things out here, with next week being a little bit bigger week. And it's been good. You know, I mentioned I did a little podcast with Jonathan Kinchin. He has a new little show, and I really had fun with it. He texted me on Tuesday and said, you know, I want you to do this thing with me. I said, yeah, no problem. And I said, can you send me a couple other ones that I can listen to and see what the format is? He goes, well, it's not really a format. It's just talk. And I said, okay, how long was that? 2 hours, he says. I said, well, okay. Well, we ended up doing 2 hours and 45 minutes. And we talk about all kinds of things. And it was really fun to do. And we talked about Monmouth Park and some new bets and some stories about Zenyatta and other things. So I really enjoyed it. I've got some really positive feedback on it. You never know how these things go, but if you go to the InTheMoneyPodcast.com, you'll find it up there for anybody that's interested. But it was really fun to do. And anyway, that's what I got.
Excellent. Well, Hammer, I will let you know that the Mullins horse in question, the Irish Dandy Man daughter, is Croc-a-Voke.
Okay.
Yeah.
I learned a long time ago it's better to say to butcher it. I'd rather say I don't know. So Croc-a-Voke. Okay, there you go. I like it even better. It's probably a city in Ireland. Who knows? I'll see what the meaning is. But anyway, and you know, we talk about the Flavian Pratt. I didn't even get to his horse there on the outside. Stella Star is another one that comes from out of it. Has been off, you know, since the China Doll, but most of these have been off anyway. But usually start with Pratt in these races. He's just been the dominant rider out here so far, especially on the turf. But enjoy the race this weekend. There's some good stuff out there. And I know you have a Nike on it, and I think the shows that they've done, that group on Fox Sports 1, I haven't found Fox Sports 2 yet on my channel list, but very, very informative, very conversational. You know, nobody talks over anybody. They really feed off each other well, and Maggie is a part of that. And very easy listening and watching, too. So we're glad to be get our game out there as many places as we can, and it's great. So you know, summer's here and the time is right. So let's go.
Away they go. Rick Hammerly, everybody. And we'll talk to Rick ahead of the big weekend next weekend. And that'll include the opening weekend of stakes action at Belmont. We're going to stay right here.